Hare Krishna. So we are continuing with our lecture series, which is entitled From Rags to Riches, A Journey from Poverty to Prosperity, based on the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, the interactions between Lord Krishna and his devotee, Sudama. As yesterday morning and yesterday evening, we were discussing that I have chosen to divide this entire episode into 9 different sections. First, qualification of Sudama. Second, condition of Sudama and his wife. Third, conversation between Sudama and his wife. Fourth, contemplation of Sudama on the Lord. Fifth, preparation of Sudama to visit the Lord in Dwarka. Sixth, commutation of Sudama, his travels to Dwarka. Seventh, reception, how Lord Krishna receives Sudama in Dwarka. Eighth, recollection. Both of them sit and recollect and reminisce the memories in the ashram of their guru. And ninth, reciprocation, how the Lord reciprocates back with Sudama. So yesterday morning and evening, we covered the first three qualifications of Sudama, the condition of Sudama and his wife, and the conversation between Sudama and his wife. And the conversation was that Sudama's wife was trying to request Sudama that since we are poverty stricken and there is not much we have, you must go visit your friend Lord Krishna in Dwarka, and he being Shripati, the husband of the goddess of fortune, he will bless you with all the opulence that is necessary for you to lead a normal, luxurious life. Now, being thus requested by his wife, Sudama, he starts thinking to himself. He thinks to himself that it is not really worthwhile to go all the way and ask Krishna simply for some wealth. The famous presidential speech given by John F. Kennedy when he was elected as the President of the United States of America shook the entire country, shook all the citizens to their very core. And what John F. Kennedy spoke in his inaugural presidential address is indeed the slogan for the life of a devotee. J.F. Kennedy said, "Ask not what the country can do for you. Ask what you can do for the country." So far everyone had always complained, why is the government not doing this to us? Why is the country not doing this to us? And J.F. Kennedy had a massive paradigm shift that he brought in the certain citizens of the United States of America. Do not ask what the country can do for you. Ask what you can do for the country. So also Sudama thought in his mind, why should I ask what Krishna can do for me? Let me ask myself what I can do for Krishna. When we ask what Krishna can do for us, that is mixed devotional service. When we ask what we can do for Krishna, that is pure devotional service. And we want to advance from the stage of mixed devotional service to pure devotional service. We want to see what we can do for Krishna rather than seeing what Krishna can do for us. Of course, in devotional service, when we want to serve, we may go and ask Krishna, Krishna, help us in our service, give this for our service, and that's a whole different game. But the fact of the matter is that a devotee does not want to ask Krishna for anything that is meant simply for his personal gains and personal benefits. Sudama felt greatly uncomfortable within his heart. My wife is pestering me to go and ask my friend Krishna, the Lord, for some wealth. I just cannot do that. But how do I avoid all this pestering? How do I avoid all the pressure that she's putting? Husbands usually keep saying, yes, yes, I'll get it. I'll do it for you. So Sudama was thinking, maybe I should just say a yes and go to Dwarka. What was he thinking in his mind? That is the fourth thing, his contemplation. What is his contemplation? I shall definitely agree to and abide by the request of my wife, not to go to Dwarka to ask for Krishna for anything, but ayam hi paramo labho uttama shloka darshanam. What a wonderful opportunity this is. Uttama shloka darshanam. To be able to go and behold the beautiful form of Krishna, who is Uttama shloka, glorified by choice poetry. As Srila Prabhupada translated this word, Uttama shloka. He said, I do not want to go and ask for wealth. She's saying, go, but let me grab this opportunity. Let me grab this opportunity to take my travels to Dwarka. And I'm not going to ask him for anything. But this is a great opportunity to go and see the beautiful countenance of Lord Sri Krishna. To behold the beautiful form of my worshipable Lord Sri Krishna. So Sudama's contemplation was, I'm not going to ask Krishna for anything. I simply want to behold the beautiful form of Krishna. And this is indeed a wonderful principle, because there are so many who want to behold the beautiful form of the Lord. On the battlefield of Kurukshetra, there were three varieties of people in the Kaurava Sena, in the Kaurava army. One variety was those in the Kaurava Sena who were inimical to Lord Krishna. Second were those who were not inimical to Lord Krishna, but they had not cultivated their love for Krishna. And third were those who actually loved Krishna. And all of those were killed. Under the instructions of Lord Krishna, Arjuna shot arrow after arrow. The inimical were killed, the appreciative were killed, and those who loved were killed. All were killed. They were all finished. But the destinations that they got were different. In the third canto, this particular verse appears, and Srila Prabhupada comments on this verse. Those who were inimical towards Krishna, but were shot under the instructions of Krishna, achieved impersonal liberation by going into the Brahma Jyoti. Those who were appreciative of Lord Krishna, the soldiers who had no specific love, but said, oh, what a beauty, black beauty. What a beauty this Krishna is, you know. They just appreciated Krishna's beauty. Look at his beautiful eyes. Look at his beautiful eyes, which are like lotus petals spanning the expanse of his moon-like face, reaching straight up to his ears. Look at his eyebrows, resembling the bows of Cupid. Look at his glances, arrows shot by Cupid. Madan Mohan. Look at his lips, beautiful, reddish, like the bimba fruit. Look at his teeth, like a row of pearls, like a row of fragrant, shining jasmine buds. Look at his beautiful neck. Look at his gait, the gait of a lion. Look at his abdomen, marked with three lines. Oof. These people, they were simply beholding the form of Krishna and appreciating it. They didn't have any love for them. And Krishna said, shoot them. They were in the enemy's camp. And under the instructions of Krishna, Arjuna shot them. Those who were inimical achieved Brahma Jyoti. Those who were appreciative, Prabhupada explains, they achieved Vaikuntha. And yet there were others who were in the Kaurava Sena, who weren't inimical towards Krishna like Duryodhana and others, who weren't simply appreciative of his beauty like the general soldiers, but they were in love with Krishna. Bhishma, Drona, Kripa, Shalya. They loved Krishna. Simply for certain obligations, they were fighting on the Kaurava's side. They were beholding the beautiful face, the beautiful form of Lord Krishna, and Krishna said, shoot them. Whether they are inimical, whether they are appreciative, or whether they are my lovers, kill them, because they are on the side of Adharma. And when these lovers of Krishna, Bhishma, Drona, Kripa, were killed, they achieved the spiritual world of Golok Vrindavan. So right here in the Kaurava Sena, Srila Prabhupada explains, all were killed under the instructions of Krishna, but different people got different destinations based on how they appreciated Krishna's beauty. Those who were inimical went to Brahmajyoti. Those who were appreciative went to Vaikuntha. Those who loved Krishna because of his beauty and they had a relationship with Krishna achieved the spiritual world of Goloka Vrindavan. So here we have the general humans fighting against Krishna but appreciating the beauty of Krishna. And then we have demigods who are so appreciative of the beauty of the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna that Lord Shiva took the form of a beggar and came to Vrindavan to Mother Yashoda and he said, please give me some charity. And Yashoda came out with some grains and fruits and he said, no, this is not the charity I want. I want one charity. Can you give me this charity? She said, what do you want? He said, I simply want to see your beautiful son Krishna. Uttama shloka darshanam. Mother Yashoda said, fine, come in. She took this man in. This guy is a sadhu, Lord Shiva. And obviously, when Lord Shiva saw his Lord Krishna, it's like the perfection of his eyes to behold the beautiful form of Nanda Nandana. And as he left this place, pulling his damru out and, playing his damru, the drum, hand drum, Lord Krishna started crying like anything because he wanted the association of Lord Shiva even more. And Mother Yashoda had to go around looking for, where is this man? Where is this sadhu, my child? I'm giving him some candies, I'm giving him butter. Doesn't stop crying. Had to get Lord Shiva again to be able to pacify Lord Krishna. Demigods come to behold the beautiful form of Krishna. Not just demigods. Even Mahavishnu, his own incarnation, Lord Krishna's own incarnation, Mahavishnu, is so extremely charmed by the beauty of Krishna that while Krishna is in Dwaraka, as Dwarikadhish, there's a Brahmana there. And the Brahmana gives birth to a child and the child disappears. A second time the Brahmana gives birth to a child and the child disappears. A third time the Brahmana gives birth to a child and the child disappears. And the Brahmana comes to Maharaj Ugrasen. What's happening? The child is dying before the father? This is not good rule. This is not good administration. How can the child die before the father? And Arjun, as usual, takes a vow. I shall find all your sons back, wherever they may have gone. And if I cannot, I shall enter fire. That's his favorite vow. Every now and then he keeps saying this. Jayadratha, if I cannot do this, I will enter fire. And Krishna keeps telling him, why do you take such vows? I have to go out of my way, out of my way to do all of these things, reciprocate with your vows. This time again, Arjuna made a big cage of arrows around the Brahmana's house. Still the fourth son, the fifth son, the sixth son disappeared. Arjuna went all the way to Yamaloka to find if Yamaraj was the one who was stealing these sons. Couldn't find. That evening, it was the time. His vow was done now. He couldn't find the sons till that evening. He had to enter fire. He lit up a fire and as he was about to enter fire, Krishna said, don't be so impulsive. Wait. You're very impulsive. Every now and then I'll enter fire. I'll take you, I'll enter fire. Wait. Don't be so impulsive. I'll take you along. Krishna called for Daruka, his chariot, and took Arjuna on the chariot. And Krishna crossed all the three planetary systems. The lower, the middle, the higher planetary systems. Crossed the river Viraja, crossed the Brahmajyoti. And in the river Viraja, he found Mahavishnu lying there. Lord Krishna brought Arjuna to Mahavishnu. And all the sons of the Brahmana were with Mahavishnu. Srila Hridayananda Maharaj, asks this question based on Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's purports. Krishna said, hey, why did you steal the sons from Dwarka? Mahavishnu said, there's no other way you would have come to Viraja. There is no other way. There is no reason why you would come to Viraja. You have created me from your own body and I'm lying there simply for so many, eternally lying there, creating, destroying, creating, destroying, creating, destroying. What is the fees you're paying me? What are you going to give me back? And for me, there's only one thing. I am hi paramo labho uttama shloka darshanam. I simply want to behold your beautiful form. So it's not just the warriors on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. It is not just the demigods like Brahma, Chandra, Indra, Varuna, Shiva. It is his incarnations. Like Mahavishnu. who are so extremely eager to get this paramalabha, the greatest achievement, darshan of the beautiful form of Uttama Shloka, the Lord who is glorified by choice poetry. Srila Prabhupada explained so many times that the gopis constantly cursed Lord Brahma for having made eyelids that blink. They wanted to have uninterrupted darshan of Lord Krishna, because the eyelids, for the moment that they blink, they were thinking, for that much time we can't see Krishna. You know, nowadays also that happens. A lot of people curse Lord Brahma for having made eyelids when they are in front of the internet. You know, especially if they are playing video games. If they are playing video games, they curse Lord Brahma. Why did you make eyelids for a moment? I miss my attention on the video game. You know, this is the beauty of Lord Sri Krishna. Lord Kapila Dev, in the third canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, gives all of us subject matter for contemplation, like Sudama was contemplating on the beautiful form of Lord Krishna. I may not go and ask Krishna for money, but I want to behold the beautiful form of Krishna. Kapil Dev explains, one must meditate on the beautiful form of the Lord, beginning from his lotus feet to his lotus face. And he says, first, one must meditate on the ruby nails of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. These ruby nails radiate such extraordinary spiritual effulgence that when this extraordinary spiritual effulgence emanating from his ruby nails enters through the eyes into the heart, Kapil Dev says, this can cast away the thick gloom that has been created in the heart because of contact with the material energy. The thick gloom of darkness. In London, we have a good experience of that. You know, when the sun's not shining, thick, gloomy, ominous clouds cast into the sky. All of this thick gloom can be dissipated by meditating on the ruby nails of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Then he says, one must meditate on the lotus feet of the Lord, because the lotus feet of the Lord are like thunderbolts. A thunderbolt can crush mountains to powders. Similarly, he says, within the heart, there is a huge mountain, a mountain of sins, a mountain of wrong desires, a mountain of illegitimate thoughts, huge mountains. Kapila Dev says, one who meditates on the lotus feet of the Lord, those lotus feet act like thunderbolts, crushing down the mountain of sins in the heart, crushing down the mountain of illegitimate desires and thoughts within the heart, purifying our consciousness. And then he goes on, of course, this itself is a, you know, 3-hour talk that Kapila Dev talks about each and every limb of the Lord's body. Beautiful description. Then he says, one must meditate on the beautiful smile of the Lord. Hasam harer avanatha avanatakhila lokativra shokashru sagar vishoshanam atyudaram. One must meditate on the hasam, the smile of the Lord. Because when one meditates on the smile of the Lord, the result is that the ocean of tears, shokashru sagar, that has been created because of lamentation in our lives, is dried up. Who can dry up an ocean? Krishna can dry up an ocean. Our tears of lamentation create an ocean in our lives. Oceanic tears of lamentation. But meditating on Krishna's sweet smile can dry off the tears of ocean. The ocean of tears created because of lamentation. Kapila Dev says, meditate on that beautiful Supreme Personality of Godhead, for every anartha can be taken care of simply by meditating on his beautiful form. And then he says, the eyebrows of the Lord are special benediction for the sages. Because anyone who meditates on the eyebrows of the Lord, the arrows of Cupid that are struck in the heart, lust, can be purified simply by meditating on the eyebrows of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Sudama is contemplating in his mind, I may or may not get money from Krishna. I don't care. My wife is after it. She was not after it. We discussed yesterday evening. My wife is after it. I don't want that money. All I want is, Ayam hi paramo labho uttama shloka darshanam. I want to see the beautiful form of the Lord, because that is the greatest achievement of all. A reporter came to His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada and said, Swamiji, have you seen God? Prabhupada said, no, I haven't seen God. I can teach you how to see God. I may not have seen God, but I have the process how to see God. I'll give you that process and you can see God. He said, no, Swamiji, I think you must have seen God. I think you must have seen God. He said, no, I haven't seen God. Swamiji, I am convinced you have seen God. At what age did you see God? Straight. Prabhupada said, I never saw God, but I can teach you how to see God. There are great devotees who have seen God. I haven't. This man kept insisting, Swamiji, you're not getting me right. My question actually to you is that what age did you actually first see Krishna? Srila Prabhupada never answered such questions straight. Always go around saying, he saw God. They can see God, you can see God. Never say, I can see God, in his humility. Only on this one occasion, Srila Prabhupada put his head down in great humility and he said, I first saw Krishna when I was 4 years old, face to face. You see, first saw Krishna when I was 4 years old, straight. Uttama shloka darshanam. Oh my God, incredible, isn't it? Seeing Krishna face to face, have any of us ever thought, being in Krishna's association, face straight in front of Krishna, beholding his beautiful form? Whew, you know, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur dispelled our illusion in this regard. He said, do not try to see Krishna. Serve Krishna in such a way that Krishna wants to see you. And when Krishna wants to see you, we'll automatically see him. How can we not see him? When Krishna comes to see us, will we not be able to see Krishna? We'll definitely be able to see Krishna. For us, Uttama Shloka Darshanam means service. Service to Krishna. Service to Srila Prabhupada. Service to his devotees. Service to the mission. The more we serve, that is our Uttama Shloka Darshanam. Because what will we see Krishna? Even if Krishna comes in front of us, what will we see Krishna? Duryodhan saw Krishna, Shishupal saw Krishna, so many others saw Krishna. But did they really appreciate what Krishna was? Krishna's darshan can only be appreciated when it is accompanied by a very strong regimen of devotional service. Darshan means seva. Darshan does not mean seeing. The more we serve, the more we qualify ourselves for the day when Krishna does come in front of us, we can appreciate Krishna. Yes, Krishna, I'm your servant. I'm here to serve you. Therefore, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, Vrindavan is for shallow thinkers. Heavy, you know. Very strong statement. Very powerful. When I heard it for the first time, I was a little bewildered. I hadn't heard the second part yet. Powerful statement. Said, Vrindavan is for shallow thinkers. It's not a Gaudiya Vaishnava place. It's not for Gaudiya Vaishnavas, he said. So what is for Gaudiya Vaishnavas? He said, Kurukshetra is for Gaudiya Vaishnavas. He said, come on. Kurukshetra. Hey, come on. We're not going to go for Kurukshetra Yatra. There's nothing there except for a little place about Krishna now. Jyotisar, a huge lake and a tree under which Krishna spoke the Gita. Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, Kurukshetra is for Gaudiya Vaishnavas. Devotees were confused. How? Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, Vrindavan is enjoyment with Krishna. Kurukshetra is service to Srimati Radharani's lotus feet. When Krishna and Srimati Radharani meet at Kurukshetra, she wants to bring Krishna back to Vrindavan. And because she wants to bring Krishna back to Vrindavan, she needs assistance. For devotees to pull Krishna back, that is Ratha Yatra, to pull Krishna back to Vrindavan from Kurukshetra. That is where she needs our help the most. And therefore Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, wherever she needs our help the most, she is our mistress, That is where we want to be. Of course, this is not in the literal sense. This is not to say that Vrindavan is not meant for Gaudiya Vaishnava. Definitely Vrindavan is where we should be going. Definitely Kurukshetra is where we should be going. But the principle is being mentioned. Wherever there is service, the greatest need for service, when Krishna, when his devotees need our service the most, where they need our service the most, that is our place of pilgrimage. That is where we want to be. Because that is where we get the key, the opportunity for Uttama Shloka Darshanam. For that Uttama Shloka Darshanam, the key is devotional service, seva. And therefore, Sudama, his mind is now all set. I want to go to Dwarka, but not asking for money. I want to go to Dwarka to behold the beautiful form of Dwarkadhish, my friend, Lord Sri Krishna. So that is contemplation. Now, after having contemplated on this, suddenly Sudama remembers, I must prepare myself. After contemplation comes preparation. Prepare myself to go to Dwarka. Preparation for travel needs a lot of stuff, isn't it? Have you taken your passport? Do you have your visa? Are your tickets booked? Do you have your laptop charger? Your cell phone charger? Your camera charger? Your handycam charger? Your toothbrush charger? Your shaver charger? So many chargers. And to get all these charges, so much charge has to be paid. So much charge to be paid. And after paying this so much charge for these chargers, if you happen to pay so much charge to get a charger and you take it, unfortunately, on board where it is not allowed, then a charge against you. Oh my God. Sudama's preparation to go to Dwarka. What was his preparation to go to Dwarka? He saw his wife. I'm going. I can't go empty-handed to Krishna. My preparation to go is to see if I can really take something for my Lord. I can't go empty-handed to the Lord. Srila Rupa Goswami in the Nectar of Devotion explains, when one comes to the temple, one should never come empty-handed. It's a part of sadhana bhakti. To never come empty-handed to the temple when we come to see the deities. Must always get something. Always get some offering for the Lord when we come to see the Lord. You know, my God, it's not in my budget for this month. The budget for Krishna this month is over. In the first week only. Now, I don't know what I can give to Krishna. Anything. We come to Krishna, we can bring something. A flower, a fruit, some water, some offering to Krishna. An incense stick. Some ghee, some milk, some sweet, something. And if we can't get that, we bring ourselves at least. We bring our heart. We offer our heart to Krishna. We offer our words to Krishna. We offer our minds to Krishna. But never come to the temple empty-handed. Srila Rupa Goswami explains in the Nectar of Devotion. Sudama knew this principle. He was now going to Dwarka. How do I go empty-handed? I must take something for Krishna. He asked his wife, do we have some gift please? Something that I can take as a gift for Krishna? They had nothing in their house. Paupers, you know. Nothing in their house. Absolutely nothing except the two of them. No food, no furniture, nothing. Abject poverty. Sudama's wife checked every corner of the house. She didn't find anything for Krishna. No edibles, no things, nothing. You know. Jai Shri Shri Radha Gokulanand. Oh, I thought this opening the darshan. Sorry. Sudama's wife, here Sukadeva Goswami explains, begged for some chipped rice. Jai Shri Shri Radha Gokulanand ki jai. Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman ji ki jai. Shishi Gaur Nitai ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gaur Premanande Hari Hari Bo. Yachitva Chaturan Mushtin. Yachitva. Yachitva means begging. She went to the neighborhood to beg for some rice, flat rice, chipped rice. Chaturan mushtin. And what did she get? Four handfuls of rice. Now this is very interesting. When she went for begging, She got only 4 handfuls of rice. She didn't get those 4 handfuls of rice from one house. Chaturan Mushti means she got those 4 handfuls of rice from 4 different homes. She went to one home, one handful, another home, another handful, and only 4 homes she could get 4 handfuls of rice. 4 handfuls of rice from 4 homes, and those 4 homes were not all the same. Those 4 homes were the 4 homes of the 4 Varnas. One was a Brahmana home, another was a Kshatriya home, another was a Vaishya home, another was a Shudra home. So one handful of rice came from a Brahmana family, another handful of rice came from a Kshatriya family, another handful of rice came from a Shudra family, another from a Vaishya family. They were not from the same class, from the same caste. Even from a Shudra house, one handful came. 4 handfuls from 4 homes belonging to the 4 Varnas. And all those 4 varieties, those 4 handfuls of rice were not of the same variety. They were 4 different qualities. Imagine if someone at home, cooks 4 different qualities of rice mixed together. My God, what a mess. What to speak of eating it raw. 4 handfuls of rice from 4 homes of the 4 varnas of 4 different qualities. Yachitva chaturan mushtin. She got this 4 handfuls of rice and tied it up in a piece of cloth. This is all you can take as a gift for Lord Krishna. Take it, Very powerful. Because gift is not a thing. Gift is an expression of love. It does not matter what we give. What does matter is whether we are giving our affection and our love or not. It's quite interesting, in parties today, birthday parties, people keep taking expensive gifts, pack it all, wrap it all up. And it's too much below dignity, to just open the wrapper immediately in front of the host, one guest who has given the gift, and say, hey, what have you brought for me? But when one sees all these nice packs, everyone's thinking, let him go. As soon as he leaves, I just want to unwrap this box. See what is in there. The size is really big. And after he leaves, with great hope, the man unwraps, the cover, and then a box. And there's a box inside, and he takes that. There's a box inside, he takes the box. There's a box inside, takes the box. And then finally finds a small little box. And he opens, thinking maybe there's a gold ring. Maybe there is a ruby ring. Maybe there is a lapis lazuli ring. Some very expensive ring. And opens, and he finds some dust of Vrindavan. Of course, for a devotee, that is the greatest of all gifts. But see, you don't get anything better than getting some dust on my birthday. And he's thinking, what is this? Gift is not a thing. Gift is affection. And those who value affection, those who value love, those who are seekers of substance, never see the thing. They always see the love with which that thing is offered. It could even be a small little thing. Sudama knew this science. He knew that I may not have the best, but I have my love to give. Gift is something that's offered with love. Doesn't matter whether it's chipped rice. Doesn't matter whether it's a big pizza. It just doesn't matter. I remember back in a temple at Chowpatty, the ladies, they cook Rajbhog offering for the Lord. And one item, certain items are fixed on the Rajbhog. One item that is fixed is rabdi. Thick condensed milk. Thick rabdi. And, the Mahaprasad comes down for 1 o'clock lunch where all the brahmacharis and some members of the congregation take lunch together. Everyone sits and is served. Little Mahaprasad to everyone. And we remember once when we ate the rabdi, Mahaprasad says, oh my God. Such an expression on our face. It was sour. Supposed to be sweet. It was sour. Because, I don't know if you get it here in India, you get crystal sugar, white sugar, of course you get here. And you get also something called a citric acid. It looks exactly like sugar. And they had not labeled those bottles. So the lady, thinking this is sugar, had finally reached to the stage of condensing it. And at the end, she added sugar and mix, so it wouldn't even, kind of curdle. Because it's now condensed, it won't curdle now. So she added sugar, and Krishna had to eat it. Of course, Krishna had to eat it. Krishna has no problem. He is the seer of substance. This is the seer of love. When we had to eat it, we are not the seers of love and substance. We are the seers of sugar. Is there sugar in it or not? It was a tough time to eat that rabdi. Of course, we had to correct those ladies and tell them that this is, you know, probably you should label things and all of that. But Janani Vas Prabhu was mentioning, when one offers bhoga to Krishna, so many faults there. Finally, it comes to Srimati Radharani. She gives the magical touch. And everything is rectified. So Krishna doesn't taste the sour thing. You know, Krishna tastes the sweetness of love behind that. He's never tasted the sugar or the citric acid. He tastes the love behind that offering. You know, and therefore, Krishna is bhavagrahi. He sees the mood, the devotion, the feeling, the purpose, the intent with which that gift is offered, that offering is made. Gautam Buddha was once sitting under a tree meditating. And a very wealthy man came and offered him a bag full of most precious jewels. And Buddha accepted it with his left hand. Now, by the way, in the Vedic culture, to accept charity with the left hand is considered very offensive. You don't really honor a person when you accept something with your left hand. And then there was a lady who saw that this man had given Buddha such a massive chest of jewels. She thought, what can I give Buddha? I don't have anything to give Buddha. She only had a fruit and she had eaten the fruit half. That's all I have. So she went and gave this half-eaten fruit to Buddha and Buddha accepted it with the right hand. Now this man who had given so much wealth, he was very upset. Said, I gave you so much. It was so offensive on your part to accept it with the left hand. And this lady gives you a half-eaten fruit and you accept it with your right hand. Buddha replied, for you, you probably have a million more such treasure chests in your house and you've only given me this much. So since you've only given me this much, a part of what you have, I accepted it with my left hand. But in this lady's life, she only has this half-eaten fruit. Since she has given me all she has, I accepted it with my right hand. You know. So yes, Sudama, he didn't have anything practically. All he had was now this chipped rice. And this was his preparation to go to Dwarka. Picking this chipped rice up, Sudama now begins his journey, which is the next part, commutation. As Sudama starts his travel from Porbandar, Gujarat, to Dwarka, Gujarat, both are in Gujarat. How many of you have been to Porbandar? Okay, a couple of you have been to Porbandar. Wonderful place. There is the birthplace of Sudama, temple of Sudama, and the prasadam that is given there is chipped rice and candy sugar. You know, dry chipped rice and candy sugar is offered and given. How many of you have been to Dwarka? Couple of you been to Dwarka. Amazing, beautiful place. If you have not been, next time when you go to India, make sure you go to Porbandar and Dwarka. Incredible place, Dwarka. Oh, what a beautiful place. You know, Sudama begins his commutation, his journey from Porbandar, where he lived, to Dwarka. He is in anxiety. What is his anxiety? His anxiety is Dwarka is a very safely guarded fortress. There's going to be a lot of guard stations, guards. Will I be allowed in? Will the immigration officers of Dwarka stamp my passport? Will the passport control stamp my passport and allow me entry into this different country of all countries, spiritual country? Will they allow me in? Or will I be rejected and deported straight from the airport? Sudama, with these thoughts in his mind, walks surprisingly. Trini Gulmani, there are three guard stations. One, two, three. No guard stops him. It is quite unusual for Dwarka. Anyone from outside would enter Dwarka, immediately the guards at the guard station would stop them, question them. Border control officers, you can't enter in like this. Immigration officers, you can't enter in like this. Sudama came. He could cross to all of these three guard stations. As he walked in, he passed by the palaces of the Vrishnis, the Andhakas, the Yadavas, who are all the family members of Lord Krishna. And as he walked ahead, he saw a beautiful palace, shining, illuminated. He guessed, this is the palace of Lord Krishna. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains, that particular palace was the palace of Mother Rukmini. And Lord Krishna was at that point sitting with Rukmini in that palace. As Sudama arrived, crossing the three guard stations, passing all of these palaces of his relatives, he felt that he was experiencing the bliss of Brahmananda, as if a soul goes to Brahma Jyoti. Shanti, shanti, shanti. Peace be unto you. You know. He felt he was experiencing Brahmananda. And crossing that level of Brahmananda, he enters into the palace of Lord Krishna. No one stops him. No one stops him. And as soon as Sudama enters in, just enters in, Krishna is sitting with Rukmini on his bedstead. Krishna gets up and walks straight to the gate of his palace to bring his friend Sudama in. Hugs his friend with great affection and bathes his friend with the warm tears of his love. This thing is described in great details in the Srimad Bhagavatam. I'm just fast forwarding it, you know, to get through reciprocation. Out of these 9 things that I've said, 8 things are in one chapter. And the 9th thing, reciprocation, is one whole chapter. You can imagine how much outside the scope of these 3 lectures is the subject matter that we're discussing here. So I'm just trying to fit it in as much as I can. Just cram in as much as I can. It's just beyond the scope of 3 lectures to be able to describe these 2 chapters. Incredible. If we just go verse by verse. Amazing verses. Krishna embraces him, brings him in, makes him sit on his bedstead. You know, this is Krishna's reception. Right. Commutation first. Journey of Sudama to Dwarka. And this is also very powerful because we, the conditioned souls, will also take our journey back to Dwarka, back to Golok Vrindavan, to the spiritual world. And we will also have to cross many, many gates before we reach the spiritual world where Krishna is. Like Sudama crossed through the 3 gates, we will have to cross through the 3 gates of the lower planetary systems, the middle planetary systems, and the higher planetary systems, 3 lokas. We will have to cross through all these 3 guard stations before we go to the palaces of his relatives. We will have to cross through the Brahma Jyoti. Sudama experienced this bliss of Brahmananda as he passed through this place. And finally, we will arrive at the gates of the spiritual world. One fine day, we will be back home. Till that day, we carry on and keep our faith where it belongs. Because faith in you will make us strong. And all our fate and all our fears we've undergone throughout the years will disappear like bad dreams do. For one fine day we'll be with you. That is the prayer of a devotee. That let me continue this journey. Because I'm waiting for that one fine day where all my fears that I've undergone throughout the years will all disappear like bad dreams do. For one fine day, I'll be with you, my dear Lord. All Sudama's troubles were to come to an end now. Because his journey was to be crowned with success. As he walked through, he came into Krishna's palace. Our journey goes through the 3 planetary systems. Our journey goes through the Viraja River, through the Brahma Jyoti, the soul passes past the Vaikuntha planets, which are like the palaces of the Andhakas, the Vrishnis, the Yadavas, coming to the palace of Lord Krishna, Goloka Vrindavana, straight there, where Krishna resides with his intimate associates. But there is a lot of temptations on the way, and one has to clear those temptations before one reaches the spiritual world. Uttar Kumar in the Brihat Bhagavatamrita, his journey is a classic example. When one passes by the heavenly planets, one cannot imagine the temptations. Siddha Loka, Apsara Loka, Gandharva Loka, Vidyadhara Loka. Right. All kinds of temptations. Temptations of opulence, temptation of mystic powers, temptation of control, temptation of excellent music, temptation of fine cuisines and foods, temptation of luxurious garments, temptation of sense gratification is heavens. And when the soul is going, leaving this world, Even when one is ready to go back to Godhead, still the material energy is there to tempt us on the guard stations. Will we be able to cross these three guard stations? Will we be able to go beyond these temptations? Then, after that is the temptation of Brahmananda. For someone who has had a massive headache, just the concept of having no headache is the goal of life. After having lived in this material world and gone through so much suffering, just no suffering is the goal of life. Bliss vis aage. No care for bliss. First, no suffering. Brahma Jyoti. Shanti. 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 Just be. Nothing more. Just be. You know, just be there. That is a great temptation, to be able to cross that temptation of Brahma Jyoti, to be able to cross all this temptation and come to Krishna's palace, is the test of a devotee even when he leaves this material world to go to the spiritual world. And Uttar Kumar's story in Brihad Bhagavatamrita is a classic example of this. Srila Prabhupada was asked by Bhavananda Prabhu, Prabhupada, when I come back to the spiritual world, how will I recognize you there? Interesting question. Srila Prabhupada said, you don't bother about that, I will recognize you. You know, you don't have to recognize me. I'll recognize that you are my disciple, you have come. And then Prabhupada said, me? I shall personally take you by my hand to the groves of the Vrindavan forest in Golok Vrindavan, and hand you over to Krishna to serve him, for that loving reciprocation and exchange of pastimes with him, and I shall leave outside the groves of Vrindavan. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. He said, I shall personally take you there in the groves of Vrindavan and have you meet Krishna, and I won't interfere in the middle. I'll go out because it's you and Krishna. Right? Imagine someone like Srila Prabhupada saying that to us. The person who gave us Krishna consciousness, the person who gave us the Krishna consciousness movement, the person who gave us everything, the be all and the end all of our lives in terms of Krishna consciousness, Srila Prabhupada. And he's saying that I won't be there in between you and Krishna. It's you and Krishna alone. And then you can exchange all loving affairs with Krishna. You know, whenever I hear this story, it can't do anything but melt your heart. To hear someone like Srila Prabhupada say that I won't stand between you and Krishna. Stand between you and Krishna? We don't want him to stand between us and Krishna. We want him to rule our lives even when we are with Krishna. We want him to sit on our heads and rule our lives. And here is his consciousness saying, I do not want to stand between you and Krishna when I take you to Krishna in the groves of the Vrindavan forest in Golok Vrindavan. You know? And therefore, this is the journey of Sudama. Commutation to Dwarka, and that will be our journey from this world to the spiritual world by the blessings of Srila Prabhupada, our spiritual masters, and all the Vaishnavas. We will all be able to take that journey once and for all, the last life, the last thing on this material existence. If only we try to follow the teachings of Srila Prabhupada with great faith and dedication. The eighth thing. When Krishna, Sudama comes there, Krishna brings him in, makes him sit on his own bedstead, and there's a massive reception. Krishna sits at his lotus feet, bathes his feet with the water, takes that charanamrit, sprinkles on his head, sprinkles on Rukmini and everyone else in the palace. Then he offers sandalwood, camphor to his feet, offers him flowers, offers him arati, the Bhagavatam explains. I mean, we do aarti to Radha Gokulananda. Imagine Gokulananda doing aarti back to us, a return gift. And nowadays in parties, they have this concept of return gift. If you go for a birthday party, then you give a gift to the child and there's a return gift that everyone's supposed to take back on the way back. So I'm offering aarti to Gokulananda. And as we are doing that, we suddenly find he keeps the flute down and manifests another aarti in his hand and starts offering aarti. What's going on here? Both offering aarti to each other. Can we imagine that? Krishna offering aarti to Sudama. My God, incredible. This scene is incredible. Reception of Sudama. And therefore, based on the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, it's explained that when any soul from this world, Krishna's lost child, comes back to the spiritual world, when he arrives at the gate, like Krishna got up and came to receive Sudama, similarly, Krishna comes out of Golok Vrindavan to receive the soul back to the spiritual world. The Brihad Bhagavatamrita explains, he doesn't just walk, he brings his entire entourage with him. I want to show that I'm welcoming you, my dear soul, come back. And Brihad Bhagavatamrita explains, doesn't just come with his entourage, they come with Mridanga and Kartal having Kirtan to receive the soul back. Wherever Srila Prabhupada went in the world, devotees would receive him with exuberant, enthusiastic kirtan. Krishna and his entourage comes to the gates of Golok Vrindavan to receive us back to the spiritual world in spite of having, you know, rebelled at times. Not at times, many times. Krishna says, doesn't matter. You know, in Hindi there is a saying, I don't know if it's in English, but in Hindi there is a saying, Subha ka bhula, यदि शाम को लौट कर आए उसे भूला नहीं कहते. A guy who has rebelled in the morning, in the evening if he reforms and comes back, not to be considered a rebel. Krishna never considers us a rebel. We go back to the spiritual world. Gratefully, he receives us, you know, makes us sit with him, eat with him, dance with him, run with him, play with him. Srila Prabhupada once said, the goal of the Hare Krishna movement is to go back to the spiritual world, to have a picnic with Lord Krishna on the banks of the river Jamuna, to see what Mother Yashoda has packed for Lord Krishna in his lunchbox, and to share that. What a noble goal. What a high goal. And we can't dwell on these things. I'll go to Krishna, I'll become his friend, I'll open his dabba, I'll eat his laddu. We can't dwell on these things. All we can do is serve Srila Prabhupada. And this most noble goal will automatically be conferred upon us. It's not something that we can delve into, something that is given as a gift to us. Therefore, one of Srila Prabhupada's godbrothers would say, you know, what is that? He would say, fools... fools dare to rush. Fools rush where angels dare to tread. You know, even that area where angels wouldn't dare to tread, fools rush in there. I want to be a sakha, I want to be a sakhi, I want to be a gopa, I want to be a gopi in Vrindavan. What is this? Srila Prabhupada never focused on these things. Prabhupada said, you are a servant of Krishna. Chant Hare Krishna, you are not the body. Realize that first. And if we simply follow what Srila Prabhupada taught, all these noble aspirations of who we are and what our relationship is conferred upon us. You know? Therefore, Prabhupada's godbrother said, fools rush where angels dare to tread. You know? In any case, the reception of Sudama by Lord Krishna gives us three very powerful teachings. First is how Lord Krishna worships his own devotee. Here in this verse, Lord Krishna is addressed as Trailokya Guru. Trailokya Guru means the Guru of the three worlds. And Guru doesn't simply teach by words, Guru teaches by example. Therefore, Sudama, when he comes to the palace of Krishna, Krishna wants to teach the world, being Trailokya Guru, that if I am worshipping my devotee, how much more everyone else should worship devotees. You know, Mad Bhakta Pujya Bhyadika, Lord Krishna says, the worship of my devotee is greater than my own worship. Sometimes when people would come to meet Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur and say, I am a devotee of Krishna, can I have, ask some questions? He would say, I don't have time, go. And people would come to Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, said, I have some questions. Said, really, who are you? Sir, I am simply a servant of your devotee. Said, yes, ask whatever questions you have. Anyone who would say, I am a devotee of Krishna, Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur never gave him any time. Anyone who would say, I am a devotee of Krishna, Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur would answer his questions. Lord Krishna, by worshipping Sudama and receiving Sudama, wanted to show how we should worship a devotee like a deity. One offers aarti only to a deity. He was teaching how one should worship devotees like a deity. How sacred worship of devotees is. In fact, that's the only way to reach Krishna. And therefore, even Lord Ram, down south, worships Lord Shiva. And that's why it's called Rameshwaram. Why does he worship Lord Shiva? To show What is the position of a devotee? How sacred is the worship of his devotees? Secondly, in his reception, Lord Krishna wanted to show, everyone is after Lakshmi, everyone is after fortune. But he asked Rukmini, now you fan Sudama. And here is Rukmini, Lakshmi. Everyone is fanning her. Lakshmi, please come. You know, please come to our house. You know, we are fanning you. Give me more. Give me more. Give me more. Please, Lakshmi. How much I am fanning you, see? You please come. I am fanning you so much, you can't understand. I am such a diehard fan of yours. Fanning you so much. Come on, come to me. You fan her, she doesn't come, you know. And here is Sudama, a pauper, literally a beggar for that matter, in one sense, sitting there. And Krishna says to Rukmini, fan him, you know. So in his reception, we can learn. Anyone who wants the blessings of the goddess of fortune, just become a friend of Krishna. Become a devotee of Krishna. Krishna sasya sakha kaschid. Just become Krishna sakha, a devotee of Krishna. As soon as one becomes a devotee of Krishna, Krishna will ask the goddess of fortune, give him what is necessary, fan him. Of course, devotee doesn't want that. Today devotees want that, a lot of devotees. Lakshmi, please, fan me, give me something, you know. You see. But that is the way to get the grace of the goddess of fortune. Not to approach her separately, but to approach her Lord, devote our lives to the Lord, and automatically Lakshmi favored us. And the third thing in Sudama's reception that we learn is, all the residents of the palace were totally bewildered. They saw Sudama, his clothes were raggedy, torn, and so emaciated they could only see his veins and his bones. And they saw that Krishna received him, he worshipped him, he made him sit on his bed, he washed his feet, he offered aarti to him. And now he's asking the goddess of fortune to fan him. What is this? They couldn't understand who this Brahmana is. They were judgmental. Externally, he appeared to be a poor Brahmana. He appeared to be poverty stricken. They were wrong. They didn't understand that he was the wealthiest of all people. Because he had the wealth of love. He had the wealth of bhakti for Krishna. Yesterday we spoke on judgmentalism based on behavior. This is judgmentalism based on appearance. We see someone and we come to conclusions that he or she is not a good devotee. Spaced out devotee. You know. Why spaced out devotee? Look at his or her hair. This is how devotees keep hair. Devotee is supposed to have hair like this. He's supposed to have shikha. Where is the shikha? You know shikha. He's a devotee. Come on. How can this be a devotee? Look at the kind of clothes he's wearing. This is the kind of clothes you wear when you come to a temple. Doesn't he or she understand this? Such a simple principle. And when you come to a sacred shrine, you should dress up in a proper way. What are the kinds of clothes are you wearing? Devotee, spaced out fellow. How can this be a devotee? Right. You know, look at this person. Can't speak properly. Doesn't have any sense of how to talk, how to walk. You know, it's a horrible guy. We can come to a conclusion very easily by the appearance of a person and say he or she is not a devotee. He or she is poverty stricken. The residents of the palace judge Sudama based on his torn clothes and emaciated bodily structure, thinking he's poor. Who is this man who Rukmini is worshipping, whom Krishna is worshipping? Once, there was a man and his wife. They were dressed up in really simple clothes, old clothes, not dressed well. The hair was disheveled. The guy who was their husband, he had a big stubble on his face. They got down at Boston Station in America, railway station. And after getting down at Boston Station, they walked their way to the Harvard University. They came to meet the secretary to the president of the university. We want to meet the president. Secretary saw their appearance. Meet the president. Who are you? You're farmers or what are you? You know, meet this president of the Harvard University. Get lost, man. The couple, old couple, sat there. Said, no, we want to meet him. Secretary kept trying to push them off, but they wouldn't go. Finally, he went to the president. There's this couple. What should we do with them? So what do you think? I think we should kick them off. But they're not going. I said, okay, get them in. I'll meet them for a couple of minutes. So they came. When the president saw, I said, who has come in my office? The president said, sir, what brings you here? Said, we had our son who was studying at the Harvard University. He loved Harvard. Last year, he left his body. We are in great pain because he left his body, only son. We would like to donate. You know, we want to erect a memorial on the Harvard campus for him. The president got wild. Erect a memorial? This will become a cemetery if people start erecting statues of guys who were at Harvard and were dead now. We don't want it to be a cemetery. I said, sorry, I'm not talking about a bust or a statue. We want to erect a whole building in the name of our son. The Harvard president laughed. Erect a building. Look at your appearance. Think you're going to donate a building at Harvard. You know how much it costs? All the properties. This one building that I'm sitting in costs over $10 million. You think you're going to erect a building in the Harvard University? So the lady looked at the husband and said, oh, that's all it takes to start a university, is it? Why not start our own university? And this man and this lady, both of them left, this couple, and they started the Stanford University. This was Mr. and Mrs. Stanford, business giants in America then. Their son was studying at Harvard and the son left his body. And because the son had left his body, they're not paying attention to their life. Not dressing up, not really taking care of their figures. And just by looking at them, anyone can mistake farmer, poor beggar. But didn't realize that they were super wealthy. They had the capacity to start their own university, which they did. You know. Similarly, these residents of the palace, they saw poor Sudama, beggar, dressed up in, you know, ragged clothes and emaciated fellow. They didn't realize he was super wealthy. Great wealth of bhakti, unseen in his heart to anyone else. You know, Jad Bharat was misjudged by Rahugana. You know, Avadhoot Brahman was misjudged by the people around. One should never judge a person by his appearance, by what he looks. What one looks, what one wears, the kind of hairstyle one has, the kind of tilak one wears, or the kind of ornaments one has or doesn't have, has nothing to do with one's sincerity, has nothing to do with one's bhakti. And therefore, one should not come to conclusion about devotees. There are many devotees who may dress up or live in a certain way because of whatever reasons. Either they just want to be away from mainstream ISKCON, or they may even want to just, you know, do some preaching outside. They may do things in a certain way. You should never ever judge someone by their external appearance. You know. And then of course, we're coming to closely to an end of this chapter. It's getting 9. After reception came recollection. Krishna and Sudama sat on the bedstead, holding each other's hands, remembering the days in the ashram of Sandipani Muni. They recollected and reminisced all those wonderful times that they had spent in Sandipani Muni's ashram in Ujjain, Avantipur. Krishna said to Sudama, do you remember how we spent our days in the ashram of Sandipani Muni? And Krishna said, actually, if I have to tell you something, the only way that one can go ahead in his life is to take shelter of a bona fide spiritual master. And do you know something, Sudama? Actually, I manifest in the form of the bona fide spiritual master. Krishna says there. This is the particular section in which Krishna says, I come in the form of the spiritual master, guiding the spiritual master to take the soul back home, back to God. You know? And then he says, not by worship, not by austerity, not by penance shall I be satisfied. Guru Shushru Shayayatha, Krishna says to Sudama, the only way I am satisfied is by Guru Shushrusha, by service to the spiritual master. The only way, he says, I am satisfied by, is by service to the spiritual master. And then he says, such service to the spiritual master can give you the highest perfection in your life. What is an example, Sudama says? Do you have any example for greatest perfection achieved by service to the spiritual master? Oh, Sudama, how can you ask a question like this? Don't you remember while we were in Ujjain, studying under our spiritual master, Sandipani Muni, one day our Guru Mata, Sandipani Muni's wife, asked us to go and collect some firewood from the forest for the Guru's Yajna. We went, and I must tell you, it was by my own arrangement, the Lord's arrangement, that suddenly as we were in the forest, there were dark clouds in the sky. In the daytime, it was pitch dark. Suddenly, it started pouring cats and dogs. There was lightning, thunder, storm. The whole forest was flooded. We could hardly walk there. It was dangerous. Both of us had the firewood which was meant for our guru in our hands. What could we do? We had to hold that wood. It's the mission of our guru. Nothing can wash the mission of our guru away. No floods, no waters, no heat, no cold can wash away the mission of our guru. We have to protect that mission of our guru. But we can't do it. Alone, we'll be washed away. Therefore, you remember, Sudama? We held each other's hands. We held each other's hands. In one hand was the wood for our guru. And the other hand, we clasped each other's hands tightly. And this is how we were protected by the floods that came. Similarly, we have the mission of the spiritual master, mission of Srila Prabhupada, the stick in one of our hands. And the other hand is our relationships with devotees, personal intimate friendships and devotees. There are two extremes. One extreme is mission, 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 mission. No relationships. The flood of the material energy will wash us away in the name of that mission. And the second extreme is relationships. Oh Prabhu, prasad for you. You're such a sweet devotee. Wonderful times. You remember the good old days when we used to go and take, not a sankirtan, take more prasad. Now it's less prasad. You remember those good old days. Relationships, relationships. Just be personal with each other. We'll still be washed away if there's no mission. Balance is mission and relationship. Hand in hand with each other, we shall go ahead to serve the mission of Srila Prabhupada. When we have relationship and mission together, then there is transmission. We want the transmission of the spiritual knowledge to the people out there, preaching Krishna consciousness. In order for the transmission to take place, there has to be a balance between relationship and mission. Sudama and Krishna remembered these times and remembered how the next morning Sandipani Muni, their guru, had come there. Said, you have risked your lives. The body is the most dear to the soul. You risked your life for me. I bless you. I bless you. That all the knowledge that you have will be of great value to you in this life and in the next. Contrast this with Karna. Karna had cheated Parshuram, saying, I am a Brahmana, give me knowledge. And Parshuram had given him all the knowledge. One day as Parshuram was lying on the lap of Karna, there was a scorpion that came and bit Karna. It was a bloody mess all over. And Parshuram got up and said, hey, you cannot be a Brahmana, because a Brahmana cannot stand up to such excruciating physical pain. You have cheated me. You have all the knowledge, but I curse you that all the knowledge that I've given you, may you forget that knowledge when you are in the momentous hour of need. Therefore, when Karna's wheel was stuck, he tried to remember all the knowledge, the astras, he couldn't remember. Krishna Sudama was given knowledge by Sandipani Muni, and Karna was given full knowledge by Parshuram. It's not knowledge that matters. It's not knowledge that delivers. It's not knowledge that enlightens. It's not knowledge that uplifts. It's not knowledge that takes us back to Godhead. Both had knowledge. It's blessings of the spiritual master that does. When the spiritual master blesses that knowledge will be of great value to you, then that knowledge uplifts us. And when the spiritual master curses that this knowledge, may you forget this knowledge in time of need. All knowledge is there, and what is the value of that knowledge? Karna had, there was no use of that knowledge to Karna. Thus, a devotee's life is fully based on Guru Shushrusha, service to the spiritual master. Yasya prasadat bhagavat prasadah, yasya aprasadat nagati kutopi. There is no other resort but to take shelter of a bona fide spiritual master and Vaishnavas. In that association, the blessings of these great souls make this knowledge of value. It gives that, then that knowledge gives realization. Then that knowledge gives depth. Then that knowledge gives substance. Then that knowledge gives bhakti. Otherwise, that knowledge is letters. At best, it is some intellectual understanding you know, some understanding of the words and the meanings, the Sanskrit words and the meanings, and some analysis of Prabhupada's lines in the purport, breaking it into four sections. At best, some intellectual understanding. Only by the blessings of the spiritual master can that knowledge be of value. Like Krishna and Sudama were blessed here. May this knowledge be of value in this life and in the next. In this way, Krishna Sudama recollected all their good times and the final within the next 4 minutes. Right? The last, that actually the last 4 minutes is one full chapter. Sudama's interactions with Krishna, finally. Krishna sat there, Sudama's talks were all over. He said, did you get some gift for me, Sudama? What have you got for me? Krishna knows everyone's mind. Oh, sorry, I couldn't get anything for you. Come on, you must have definitely got something for me. Krishna realized he had this chipped rice. Krishna snatched away that offering. How many times when Pujari go on the altar, Gokulana snatches away. He is not even patient. He doesn't wait till the offering is over. Snatches away something from the plate, unasked for, you know. He snatched away that bag of chipped rice. And as he snatched away that bag of chipped rice, he ate that chipped rice. One handful out of the four handfuls. Just put it in his mouth straight, like Lord Chaitanya would go and snatch the banana leaves from Sridhar Kolavecha. Snatch it away from him. Snatch the banana leaf cups from him. It was not the banana leaf cups, nor was it the chipped rice. It was the love of Sridhar Kolavecha for Nimai, and it was the love of Sudama for Krishna that they were snatching away those things. As he put that handful, one handful, Rukmini rushed there and held Krishna's hand and said, wait! Not anymore, my dear Lord. One handful is sufficient. And our acharyas have explained why. She felt, one handful he has eaten. If by one handful I'll have to give him so much, empty my treasury practically on Krishna's behalf. If he eats four, I'll be bankrupt. I'll have nothing left with me. What will I offer to the other devotees of Krishna then? Krishna, please don't eat more. This thing is tough, is too valuable. This chipped rice is too valuable. I'll have to empty my treasury. All four handful means finished. I am a bankrupt, nothing else. My stock market crashes like anything, you know, by all my points. I don't know how many points, all points gone. Also, Rukmini was thinking, my dear Lord, this is not chipped rice. This is pure, condensed love. And will you alone taste that love? Is it good on your part to taste it alone? You must share it with us. We are your devotees. And you are known to share everything that you have with your devotees. Are you going to eat all four handfuls? You've taken one, enough. Leave the three for me and the other queens of Dwarka. Let us also taste that love that Sudama has for you. And thirdly, she was thinking, my dear Krishna, this is four different varieties of rice, hand-chipped rice mixed together, coming from what homes, don't know how old it is. It'll spoil your stomach, please. Don't eat more than this. One handful is sufficient. You know, this is very powerful. Rukmini is telling Krishna, take only one handful. As soon as one serves Krishna even with a little thing, Krishna blesses him with the maximum of all opulence. And the greatest of all opulence is bhakti again. Material opulence may come and go, but the greatest of all treasures and opulences is bhakti. You know, and like Rukmini is concerned about Krishna's protection. Your stomach will be spoiled. Every devotee is concerned about Krishna's protection. There she was concerned about Krishna's protection. Straight here we are concerned about Krishna's mission being protected. The other day we were discussing, Vrindavan means two things, affection and protection. The devotees of Vrindavan love Krishna, but because they love Krishna, they are willing to do anything to protect Krishna. They are willing to move from Gokul to Mahavan, Mahavan to Vrindavan. So much inconvenience constantly. Willing to take inconvenience to protect Krishna from the attack of all of these demons. Similarly, a devotee in Srila Prabhupada's movement is willing to take any inconvenience to protect Srila Prabhupada's movement, this Krishna consciousness movement, from all the demoniac elements that attack our movement. That is Vrindavan. Affection and protection. We want simply the affection part. Without protection, it doesn't come. One has to be in that missionary spirit, not in the machinery spirit. You know, come into the spirit of a missionary, not being a missionary, but assisting the greatest of all missionaries, Srila Prabhupada, in preaching Krishna consciousness. Of course, Krishna ate that chipped rice. And then after Krishna had the chipped rice, one handful, Sudama stayed there that night. And now he experienced the joy of being in the spiritual world. Previously had experienced Brahmananda. Now he experienced Bhaktiananda. There is Jadananda, Yogananda, Brahmananda and Bhaktiananda. Jadananda, pleasures of this material world which end in misery. Brahmananda, pleasure of merging in the Brahman. Yogananda, pleasure of realizing the Paramatma. Bhaktiananda, pleasure of serving the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna, Bhagavan. Jadananda is like gutter water, sewage water. That's the pleasure, stinking. It makes us miserable. Brahmananda is plain milk. Plain, just taste, not much. Paramatma realization, Yogananda, is milk with sugar, better. And Bhaktiananda is milk with dry fruits, saffron, sugar, cardamom. The highest of all joy is Bhaktiananda. Now, Sudama was experiencing that joy when he stayed in the palace of Lord Krishna. Next morning, Sudama left. As he was leaving, he was thinking, "Oh my Lord Krishna, you are so kind. You could trace that I came to you for wealth for my wife, but thank you, you didn't give me. Thank you didn't give me. It would be a great distraction for me on my path, Krishna. But what have you given me? You've given me your embrace. Kwaham daridra papi bhyam. Ko Krishna, Shri Niketana. Who am I? A low class, poverty stricken beggar? Daridra? And who are you? Shri Niketana, the master of Lakshmi. Still you embraced me. You put me on the same seat. You worshipped me. You washed my feet. You fed me. Don't want anything, Krishna. I absolutely don't want anything. Thank you for not giving." And as he reached Porbandar, there was an illumination coming from somewhere. Am I on the right address? My sat nav. Tom Tom. It's probably giving a wrong direction. This is the first time in London I saw that the Tom Tom goes wrong these days many times. With our Sundar Madhopur who takes me places, sometimes his Tom Tom shows the wrong direction, you know. Sudama was thinking, "Is my Tom Tom showing the wrong direction? What is this?" He kept walking. And then he realized, "My God, it's a massive palace. Whose is this?" And then he realized his wife coming out. First he didn't recognize her. All these beautiful garments and ornaments. "This seems to be my wife. What is she doing here?" And when Sudama realized this is his palace, said, "How is this?" Our acharyas have said, these are the three questions in his mind. You know, first he felt, "What is this?" Then he felt, "Whose is this?" And then he felt, "How is this? How did it all come about?" Then he felt only one way. Only because of Lord Krishna's mercy has this come about. He prayed to the Lord, "My dear Lord, I'm grateful to you for what you've given me. This is not something what one should ask about by my wife's pestering, and probably I had this desire as I came to you. But may I pray at your lotus feet. May I beg at your lotus feet that I may always have devotion unto you. I may always have friendship with your devotees. I always may have association of your devotees. And may I beg of you that I have the ability and the desire to renounce what you have given me." The day he has got this, he is thinking of renouncing it. Imagine. The day he has got this opulence, he is thinking, "One day I should renounce this, otherwise I will be caught up in this mire." That is Sudama. And that is a devotee who can have opulence in this life. A person who prioritizes his service to Krishna. A person who prioritizes his association with devotees. And a person who prioritizes his renunciation and not getting caught up in that opulence by the practice of devotional service, he can have the world and there is no problem. But if one doesn't have these three things, material opulence can get into the head and carry one away and distract one from the path of Krishna consciousness. Of course, Jiva Goswami, he explains, Sudama had a little false pride in his heart. He had the pride of being poverty stricken. You know, one can be proud of being fallen. One devotee signed a letter to Srila Prabhupada saying, the most fallen of your servants, Prabhupada. Such and such dasa, dasi. Prabhupada said, I'm the most fallen, Prabhupada. Prabhupada said, you are not the most anything. Even not the most fallen. In that most fallen, the most fallen. You know, that is the emphasis on the most. I am the most. Even in the fallen, I am the most fallen. Sudama had that trace of pride. Jiva Goswami explains it. I am poverty stricken. See, I don't need anything in my Krishna consciousness. I don't need anything in my... I don't need food. I don't need anything. I don't need... I can survive on this simple stuff. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur had a disciple, Brahmachari. He would be sleeping outside with no clothes in the winter season, only on a gamcha. And then all the Brahmacharis, other Brahmacharis were sleeping inside and he would criticize these sense gratifiers. They have a duvet. They sleep under a duvet. And look at how austere I am. He came to complain to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur told him, you are attached to sleeping outside and they are attached to sleeping inside. You are proud that you sleep outside and are so austere, and they are proud that they are humble because they rely on comforts. Both are proud. So now you should sleep inside to humble yourself and they should sleep outside to humble themselves. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur told him. You know, Jiva Goswami says Krishna wanted to destroy the last vestiges of anarthas remaining in the hearts of Sudama. That was nothing much. Simply some little pride of his poverty and his non-dependence on any material thing for his Krishna consciousness. Even that is pride. And Krishna destroyed it. By what? By giving him so much opulence. Say, now, what can you do? Humbled. You know, he had to be humbled by wealth. We have to be humbled by poverty. He had to be humbled by wealth. Srila Prabhupada therefore said, a devotee is never attached. He said, a devotee is like the six Goswamis of Vrindavan. Willing to build a massive temple for Krishna and living under a different tree every day for themselves. And Prabhupada said, for a devotee, if he is living in a palace and is expected to live on the streets, to renounce the palace is his renunciation. And if a devotee is living on the street and is expected to live in a palace in service to Krishna, to live in a palace is his renunciation. Renunciation is not to have a palace or live on the streets. Renunciation is to do what is necessary for Krishna's service. The Goswamis were living under different trees every day. You don't have fans here. In Bombay we have fans. Our Brahmacharis, they have fixed fan under this fan. If someone comes and rests under that, hey, this is my area. You know, you see. But this incredible episode of Sudama and his exchanges with Lord Krishna has given us very revealing insights into the practice of our own Krishna consciousness through these nine things which we discussed in the last three sessions. First, qualification of Sudama. Second, condition of Sudama and his wife. Thirdly, conversation between Sudama and his wife. Fourth, contemplation. Uttama shloka darshanam. Fifth, preparation to take a gift for Krishna. Sixth, commutation, the journey of the soul to the spiritual world. Seventh, reception, how Krishna is so eager to receive a devotee back to Godhead. Eighth, recollection, recollecting their days together, establishing the principle of Guru Shushrusha, service to the spiritual master as the be-all and the end-all of spiritual life. And lastly, reciprocation, how Lord Krishna reciprocates with his devotee Sudama. And thus the story is a story of rags to riches, from poverty to prosperity. Yes, we will all, by the process of Krishna consciousness, go from rags to riches. Sometimes materially, if Krishna wills, but always spiritually, from spiritual poverty to spiritual prosperity. Mother Teresa was asked by a person, why do you live in Calcutta amongst the poor people? Why do you only serve the poor people? She said, these people are not poor actually. She said, the wealthy people I've seen in the world are the very poor people. Because poverty is not a poverty in terms of wealth or no wealth. That's there. But real poverty is the poverty of the heart, she said. And everyone in the creation is poverty stricken from that point of view. So yes, by Krishna consciousness, sometimes Krishna will give us like he gave Sudama. But always he will give us the treasure of heart, bhakti.
by which we'll be super rich. No man can be richer than us then. And with that wealth, we can book our flight on first class. Why business class? Vaikuntha Airlines, Goloka Airlines, first class. Immigration clear, border control clear. Back home, back to the spiritual world. Wish to thank all of you very, very much for attending this lecture. Hare Krishna. ग्रंथराज श्रीमद् भागवत महापुराण की श्रील प्रभुपाद की गौर भक्त वृंद की जय। निताय गौर प्रेमानंदे हरि हरि बोल।